Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
All right, guys, we're back for another episode of Processing Blue. Mike, they won.
Yeah, sure. If you say so.
They won. It was 9 points, but it's still a win.
Yeah, no, look.
Nobody saw it, but they won.
Look, I wrote in my lead that it took a torrential downpour and a rainstorm for the Panthers to experience a little bit of sunshine for the first time in, like, 2 months. Gritty win. Interesting win. I think it speaks to the character of the coaches and the players that are still here. Because you're, as one person told me, like, when you're in those elements, you kind of have to stay, like, zoned in throughout.
Yeah.
You're uncomfortable. You're wet. You're frustrated. It's a grind out game. It seems like nothing can go right but the defense. A huge win. As far as establishing that Bryce Young can do this. Right. I think there's been a lot of, I mean, and we'll talk about this a little bit more in the podcast later in the podcast, but, like, I think there's been a lot of back and forth. There's, like, there are folks that are very heavily in the Bryce Young camp, and there are folks that are very heavily outside of the Bryce Young camp. And I think, listen, he made some throws that were spectacular. In this game, he also had some ducks, right? But what I think, the biggest takeaway for me and what was special about this for me is on that drive, we saw two things. We saw Bryce Young somewhat elevate the play around him. Now, the DJ Chark catch is dropped or out of bounds probably 99 out of 100 times. That was an incredible catch. He put the ball exactly where he needed to, but it was going to be a difficult catch.
Right.
The pass to Tommy Treble was important. But the second thing that I saw was, and we have not seen this at all, a playmaker bailing Bryce out.
Whoa.
We have not seen that. Bryce has no margin for error.
Yeah.
And he underthrew the heck out of that ball to Jonathan Mingo that collected 20 yards. And Jonathan Mingo dove for the ball, won a scramble drill, did a nice job. I think that's important to see because Bryce Young is a guy who, to this point, has needed perfect parameters to have a really good drive.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that that is necessarily something that shows tangible growth. But in this circumstance, rain pouring down,
mm-hmm.
the offensive line had to stay sturdy, which they did outside of a sack that was called back for a penalty. I thought Bradley Bozeman played the best game of the year for himself. I thought Taylor Moten continued to play extremely well. I think this team is just what it is. They just need to limp to the finish line. But for once, the offense, when they were given the opportunity by the defense to win a game, they delivered.
What does this win mean then, Mike, moving forward for the Panthers? I mean, you got 3 games left, but what does it mean?
Well, I mean, I think it says that from a spirit standpoint, they're not dead in the water. Like, you know, the Matt Rhule error ending and then moving to Steve Wilks, there was a clear shift in personality. There was a clear shift in how the locker room kind of reacted and how it operated. Here, it feels like business as usual, but it feels like guys are still bought in. And I think that says something about Chris Tabor and his ability to stay the same person. I think it says a lot about the team and that, like, they're losing weekly, like, in, like, abysmal ways.
Yeah.
But they're still staying together. And that's a credit to the coaching staff and the roster. I think this win's important because, realistically, I don't know if there's another win on the schedule, but it gives you some momentum.
I was just about to ask you about that.
Well, no, I mean, look, here's the thing. I've said this season's been about Bryce the entire time, and yes, correct, you want to avoid handing the first overall pick to Chicago, but I think realistically they're probably a win for Arizona or a win from New England and two more losses away from just doing that, right?
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
You know, the masses need to see that Bryce can have one of those games because, truthfully, they're undrafted rookie quarterbacks. There are late round quarterbacks that are rookies, CJ Stroud, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Everybody you want to compare him to, he's the guy that has accomplished the least, really.
Well,
like from a game to singular game standpoint. And so, you know, Green Bay just gave up over 300 yards to Baker Mayfield and four touchdowns, by the way. You know, this could be a prime opportunity at home, for surrounded by Packers fans, for him to.
So you don't think the win is going to change the fans coming to the games or not?
I mean, maybe a little bit, but Packers fans travel like crazy. They're like Eagles fans.
But they
like
got to get tickets to come in.
Right. So, like, I think this is an opportunity for this team to say, you know what? We have some talent here. We can put together a drive. Let's go put together a game. And I think, you know, they're going to play Green Bay, who their defense is struggling. They're going to play the Jaguars, who seem to like step on their tails almost every single week over the last month. And then they're going to play Tampa Bay, who is kind of like this Jacqueline Hyde style team that one week they'll show up and play really well. The next week they'll be awful. And so, look, if they can go 2-3 in these next couple of games, in these three games, I think that says a lot about the foundational pieces on the roster. J.C. Horn is back. He's playing extremely well. Derek Brown, who we'll talk about later, is playing extremely well. The defense in general is playing. I mean, they only allowed one scoring drive, and really that was based off of like three plays. So, I think there was a lot to take away from like a morality standpoint, from a morale standpoint, excuse me, and from a confidence standpoint. And really, that's all you can kind of tip your hat, lean your hat on, because there's nothing else to play for.
The Packers lost 2 in a row. The Jaguars lost 3 in a row. I mean, is it realistic to think that the Panthers could have a 3-game winning streak going into Tampa Bay?
Well, I'm certainly not picking them. There's a reason why I'm last in our our four-man picks competition. I mean, they won by 2 points against a mediocre Falcons team. They've scored 24 points total in their two wins this season. Yeah, I mean, look, this team has not scored 20 points since the bye. Like, it's a bad offense, and it's not going to get better until somebody new comes in. And I don't know how much it's on Thomas Brown, but he's certainly not helping some of the play callings. But I mean, he called a great final drive, but like, man, if I have to see a shotgun run on 3rd and 1 or 4th and 1 again, I'm just going to flip over my notes and say, hey, they're going to punt.
But Mike, what was so different? Let's rewind way back to the Seattle game when they did move the ball, they did score. What has been so different between that game and the rest of them?
Man, you are like big on the veteran experience, just like you are here, you know? Andy Dalton, man. I mean, I think, look, Andy Dalton knows what he's doing. There's no panic in him. He's been a starter in this league for over a decade. Mm-hmm. Like he's just used to it. I also think Seattle's passing defense was terrible at the time. I mean, we talked about it all week that week. Look, I mean, I hear you. Like, it's it's one of those things where Frank Reich was calling the plays for a veteran quarterback. It was a little bit different, and I think he was successful. And I think people are right to point to that one game and say, look, well, the offense operate well, they still lost.
They did.
And lost by quite a bit.
They did.
So I think that was the only game that they eclipsed 20 points where they were not playing against prevent defense. And so, yeah, you could argue. Look, I said when they signed Andy Dalton, he was the perfect bridge quarterback, but everybody was like, no, if they draft somebody first overall, well, Bryce has got to start right away. No, he didn't. Why? Like, what tangible expectation did you have that could have been met with him not starting the first three games of the season or the first five games of the season and then playing? Like, to me, they had so many opportunities to go to Andy, and they haven't. And so now you're kind of stuck. And if you were to move to Andy now, it would be a pretty transparent
that you
want to save giving up the first overall pick. Like, that's really what it would be. I mean, I don't really know what more there is to do. Bryce just led this game-winning drive. I don't know. They're in a lose-lose situation no matter what.
Well, Mike, speaking of the offense, what does this team need to do to improve the offense in the offseason?
Well, I think they need a complete overhaul. And even if that comes at the expense of the defense, I think free agency, you've got to be spending on offensive line upgrades. You've got to be spending on a tight end upgrade, wide receiver upgrades. Like, this offense is just awful. Like, Adam Thielen should be in the third wide receiver realistically next year, as well as he's played this year. I'm still, like, the jury's still out on Jonathan Mingo. I thought he had a positive outlook this past game for what it was. I think they need a true number one wide receiver, and I don't know where that's going to come from, because I'm under the impression T. Higgins will be franchise tagged. I don't see them trading for Devontae Adams. I don't think he'd want to come here. There's just a lot of stuff in flux, and I just think they really need to prioritize offense. It's not about complimentary spending. They're projected to have roughly $40 million. That's a lot of salary cap space, but there are 12 teams projected to have more. They did some restructures last year this year that pushed cap over. I don't know if those were the best decisions. They're going to pay for it one way or another, no matter who's in charge. It's going to be a difficult offseason. Like, this team is not like a year away, and it doesn't matter who they hire. It doesn't matter how bad the division is. Like, they realistically should have viewed this season as a complete rebuild, and they didn't. And they made some moves that
they were talking Super Bowl. You're not saying rebuild. It's crazy.
Well, but why? Like, I understand. I know you're a glass half full kind of guy, but like, why?
I'm going on what was coming out of the Panthers' brass, what they were saying to the public. That's what.
Oh, well, I mean, no, they said they wanted to win the division. I don't know about the Super Bowl, but like, this team's just not good, and they were never good. Like, that was just, like, I remember sitting there watching the first two preseason games and thinking to myself, man, I'm probably not going to be able to take time off in January or do, because there's going to be some sort of movement.
Right.
I didn't expect the head coach to be fired. I just figured there'd be, like, a new offensive coordinator or something crazy. But, like, this team is just not good. And they're not going to be good for a while. I hate to be negative here, but like, this is not a 1 year fix. This is not a one off season fix.
Right.
I hate to be extremely negative. It's just like the reality of the situation. They're a bad team. They don't have a first round pick. They've got to re-sign three major defensive players when they probably can only do two and still service the offense. This is a mess.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Do you try to trade back into the first round?
I wouldn't use like their second round pick to trade into the first round. That's like a bad allocation of resources, unless there's somebody who falls that you feel like you have.
Unless they'll be 33. Yeah.
Right. But 33 is an extremely valuable pick.
Yes, absolutely.
Just like I criticize them for not trading back from 39, because the top 40 pick can get you a lot of juice.
Mm-hmm.
If I were them, I would trade back to get more picks. Like this is a multi-year rebuild. Now, if you say to me, well, Brian Burns is franchise tagged and he can't agree to a contract extension and you can trade him for a one, sure. I would be pro that. You can't be this bad and not have a first round pick. It's whatever. But you also shouldn't cut off your nose to spite your face either. You shouldn't be giving up more draft picks to trade up into the first round. Like, we saw it this year. A lot of stuff tangibly happens where it's cyclical, right? So you trade up all this stuff for Bryce Young. So your extra picks are gone from the San Francisco trade. Then you sit at 39 because you feel like this is a must-have wide receiver, even though anybody from the outside could have told you he was a project that probably would have been around the mid-50s, and you could have traded back 10 to 15 spots and picked up another third-round pick. So, then, by the way, you could draft somebody at tight end or wide receiver again or another position of need instead of feeling the need to trade up for DJ Johnson, who was a fifth-round pick on the boards of some of the people that I spoke with. Cool. They did that whole blueprint series where they're like, we won the trade chart. Well, it doesn't matter if you draft a player who is not good.
Yeah.
DJ Johnson he's been fine on special teams. He has not produced a sack. He's done okay against the run. We've talked about this a ton. I hated that pick. Not the process of the pick. I'm not hating on the prospect. I'm hating on the process of the pick.
Mm-hmm.
Chandler Zavala, who I still think is going to be very good, has had like the most epically bad rookie season you could possibly have.
Yeah.
After being thrust into the lineup, Jamie Robinson's more of a special teams player. He was a healthy scratch this past week. Like, you've got to have a lot of lottery tickets when you go into the draft, especially when you're a team that's not good. And, I think forcing yourself into the first round is not a great use of assets. Remember, they don't have a second round pick in 2025 either.
Yeah.
So compounding the problem does not make a lot of sense. I would wait to touch the defense until the draft because you have this great core of veterans. Okay, let's say they trade Brian Burns, right? You still have J.C. Horn, who needs to prove that he can stay healthy. Mm-hmm. Derek Brown. Hopefully you re-sign Frankie Louvu. There's Xavier Woods and Von Bell feel like keepers. Like, there's talent there. The problem is, like, where do you kind of attack the defense? Like, they need to start another starting corner potentially if they decide to move on from Dante Jackson or CJ Henderson walks. They need to figure out what they want to do at nickel. Troy Hill's been tremendous. Maybe they re-sign him, especially if Everett stays. Like, there's a lot going on here. It's not going to be an easy fix. They're going to have to be creative. And again, I think expectations should be tempered for the foreseeable future.
Wow. Everett, do you buy him as a legitimate head coach candidate?
I think he's a legitimate head coach candidate. I don't know if he will be here. Mm-hmm. It does kind of seem like they want to go offense again. Just everything I've heard. That said, I think that's foolish. I think you should never try to put somebody in a box and make that what you hire. That's what you do with Frank Reich. You're like, oh, I want a QB guru and an offensive wizard or whatever. And then he comes out and does the exact opposite of what you intended to do. And so you need a leader of men. You need a person who can rally the troops, who can restore order, who can have a long-term vision, who can be here for several years.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, that should be a wide open search. Everett is a guy who has come in. He's dealt with a plethora of injuries everywhere. I think every member of the secondary has missed multiple games due to injury or what have you. And then, you know, he's working with Derrick Brown and a bunch of people no one's ever heard of up front. And they're playing better against the run over the last few weeks. Linebacker, they lost Shaq Thompson after two, you know, almost immediately. Like, yes. They've been through the ringer on defense, and Evero has been able to, you know, save the group in a lot of ways. And I think that speaks to him. Then again, you say to yourself, well, some guys are just coordinators. And I mean that in a general sense. I'm not saying right. That's Evero.
Right.
I just think you've got this great young coach. And if you want to keep him, I mean, chances are, you know, he's going to get interviews for head coaching jobs again. He's seen the league as a really sharp guy and a guy who's on the rise. You know, maybe, I mean, you've been able to scout him for an entire year.
Yeah.
You know, he should be a heavy favorite in the candidate race, and I just don't get the feeling that they really want to do that.
Who do you think will be the favorites of the candidate race? And if, well, Mike Tomlin is not with Pittsburgh next year, would he be one of them?
I don't know. Would he want to come here? That's the question. Like, that's always the question. Like, Ben Johnson's going to be high on their list.
Yeah.
I expect, you know, if they do open up the search to stuff outside of offense, Dan Quinn's going to be the belle of the ball this offseason. He's going to get another head coaching job. I think, like, the Belichick stuff is interesting, but he's older and Tepper wants a long-term fix.
Yeah.
Belichick's a great coach still. He's a terrible personnel man, so it's a matter of overcoming that. Well, you know, he honestly has a pretty comparable draft record to the Panthers over the last several years, honestly. Yeah. I think the last guy that Belichick signed who was a top three pick was DeMar Hamlin, or not DeMar Hamlin, excuse me, Daron Harmon.
Well,
And he was a third round pick in like 2010. So, like,
time ago, yeah.
it's been a while. And so I think when you look at him, he's kind of aged out, I think, of the process. Do they want to hire a VP of football operations? Do they want to keep Scott Fitter? I think all of that stuff matters when you look at the head coaching search. I can't remember if I mentioned this on a previous podcast, but to me, Frank Smith is a guy they should look at. He's a guy who does a lot of the operational stuff behind the scenes for the Miami Dolphins. I've gotten a lot of positive feedback about him. I think having a CEO head coach is not the wrong way to go, especially if he's a good leader of men. And the rest will follow. And you hire a young offensive mind. If you lose him in 2 years, well, that means you're having success. So, I don't know. I think this is going to be a wide open race. I think they need to do a very good job of filtering out the system, whether that means hiring a search firm or, you know, hiring a football czar at the top to be the go-between Tepper and the front office.
Perfect world. When would that guy be in place?
After the season. I mean, like, I think that's, you know, you've built up this personnel department for 4 years, like, trying to piece it together. So to blow it up before the draft doesn't seem all that intelligent, especially when you're going to use their scouting reports anyways. That's typically how it goes. So, yeah. You know, putting somebody in place to then make a decision on Scott Fitterer and company after the draft makes sense. I think it's a matter of getting them in here before free agency, before the combine, and really kind of, you know, planting the flag up top.
All right. Well, now it's time for my favorite part of the show. I know you got something teed up. It's time for Case Takes.
All right. So it's time to recognize the greatness of Derrick Brown. Okay. This guy, you know, is playing on a defensive line where he's playing four technique. Now, four technique, unlike a regular defensive end position, is a read and react position. And not to get too X's and O's with you, you're typically not an attacker as a traditional four technique. You're playing inside leverage, you're reading the block, and then you're reacting. So think about that for a second. Instead of immediately being in attack mode, you have to see what the play is and then attack, right? A lot of teams that have pass rushers, they just go and they stop the run to the pass. And so, you know, what Derrick Brown's been able to do, you know, sack numbers aside, he's getting tons of, I think PFF has him at 23 pressures, 41 stops, Those 41 stops, I believe, lead all inside defensive linemen in the league. He's just, I mean, he's dominant, and you see it on every play. And you know a great player is great when he affects the play and he's not even near the ball. And if you watch Derrick Brown, he's constantly affecting the play, whether he's near the ball or not. He's making plays for other people. He's a special player. I don't care about what the sack stats say. This dude is a top 10 defensive tackle in the league, maybe a top five guy.
Well,
he's had an incredible year. I think he's doing a lot of great work under Todd Wash. They seem extremely happy with him. And frankly, I would extend him before I extended Brian Burns based on performance this year. Okay. So, look, I mean, again, the sacks aren't there, but there's more to pass rush than sacks. There's pressures. There's, you know,
drawing doubles.
They're setting the stage for other pass rushers. Like, he does everything. He takes on additional blocks. He moves guys out of the way. He's batting up passes left and right. He's, I mean, that interception against the Saints was incredible. He is just such an impressive player and a gem and a blue chip player that I think this team has a really good face of the defense, whether Brian Burns is here or not.
Well, there you have it from Mike K, number one Panthers writer. You guys out there on YouTube, make sure you like, share, and subscribe. And hit that notification bell so when Mike drops his latest episode with it, you get a hold of it. And we'll catch you next week on Processing Blue.
Yeah.